Hey, this is Jeff Johnston, host of the Living Undeterred podcast, and I am so stoked for not just this show, but for what we're building for the future. For those of you that are familiar, I had a podcast for 3 years, and I took a year off to build a passion project of mine that we'll talk a little bit about, and really was an inspiration behind the original idea of the Living Undeterred podcast, I think 4 years ago now. I was keeping score, right? And what I wanted to do now with the rebranding of the show, obviously it's Living Undeterred, but it's powered by Brighton, because Brighton is really the initiative that we want to talk about mental wellness in a holistic aspect versus today with so much emphasis on treatment and prevention. We wanted to be a lot more intentional on inspiring and empowering people to make better choices with their mental wellness. So this new rebranding will be similar, that you'll see conversations with, as today, previous guest that was on my previous show. And I wanted to be a little bit more intentional on some of the initiatives that we're working with, so that you'll see more emphasis on mental wellness. We're going to talk a lot about goals and empowerment. And so again, excited to have you all back. And our first show today is an old friend. Not old, but
I'm old.
But I was really excited when I was thinking of who'd be my first guest back onto the rebranded Living Undeterred podcast. And I didn't have to go very far, but a really good personal friend of mine, Kenyon Murray, is here. So we're just going to dive right into it, Kenyon. As you know, my style is kind of like with your show, less questions and just more authentic conversation, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for people who don't know you, which is probably nobody watching the show, maybe a little bit about who you are, what you represent, and wouldn't hurt to maybe talk about how our paths go back.
Yeah.
You know, way back.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think, you know, talking about how our paths go back, we'll start there. You know, your dad was, Dave Johnston, was our team doctor. He was the team doctor for Iowa men's basketball.
Now, what
for
year
a long
was
time.
That again?
Oh, good Lord. So let me go ahead and date myself. 1992 to 1996.
Okay.
So, got to know, obviously, your dad was one of the ones that kept me on the floor, never missed a game. I attribute a lot to him and the training staff. We go back from there, but then we talk about our families. So Chris Keegan mm-hmm. and Ian have been friends since AK, since mm-hmm. they're like 5 years old. So yeah. You know how it is when you're parents and then you got kids and then your kids have friends and then it just kind of brought us all back together.
Right.
Not only the Johnsons and the Murrays, but the Renners as well was a big, we had a little group of us that, you know, we'd hung together and did vacations and everything. And then the boys are still really good friends. And so, and then our wives were business partners. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you talk about the tangling of our families is just kind of crazy. And we spent a lot of good, close time together, going on vacations and that kind of thing. But for me now, you know, that was like a different chapter, right? It's mm-hmm. a different chapter of life. And the chapter that I'm in now is obviously with all the kids out of the house. We're empty nesters. And, you know, I think a lot of times parents have to redefine themselves mm-hmm. when they become empty nesters. And Michelle and I are it's definitely happened to us. Probably a little bit more her than me, just because a lot of my projects keep me busy, but you know, she's really tapped into some things that she's wanted to do, some bucket list type of things. And so for us right now, we're really trying to, in this next chapter of life, really leave an impact on our community, on our family, and the other families that we come in contact with. So we're really into a couple of really cool projects, both nonprofit and for-profit. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one is creating this, I don't know, you can call it a facility, you can call it a center, sports complex. But I really believe that it is going to become a hub of wellness resources mm-hmm. top to bottom, whether you're talking about financial literacy, mental wellness. We're going to create a space where really our mission as a foundation is just to provide resources to families in our community to help them thrive. And that's
okay, so a sports complex focusing on financial literacy. Wow, that sounds like a great idea. Okay, I know a lot of people that are watching this first time. They really want to know how that works and why. And so maybe, you know, I think on the one of our onboarding questions on the app is what percentage of professional athletes, I think we've said football players, like NFL footballers, go broke after 5 years. And it's like 78%. So I can obviously see the value, but explain to the average person out there that has a son or daughter that's maybe looking for an organization like yours to line up with, how important is it to have a healthy relationship with money? And then, you know, obviously that leads into the boys with their NBA careers and their endorsements and sponsorships and how fast you can go through money if you're not careful. But what is the common thread, I guess, between what you're trying to build with this sports complex and a healthy relationship with money and why that's important for not just kids, but for parents too?
Yeah, I think because our responsibility as, you know, when you have a grassroots basketball program, volleyball program, whatever it is, baseball, you name it. I think in today's world, it's important that kids understand this, especially if they want to go the sports route, because now with NIL and those kind of things, there's a lot of kids that have opportunity, not only in college, but now in high school.
Yeah.
To actually sign NIL up, you know,
deals. Lots of money. Lots of money in high school.
I mean, you're talking, our cousin signed for $3 million as a high school senior with Adidas, right? And so it's one thing to have the representation to get you that opportunity, but then how are you managing that? Mm-hmm. And we've been so blessed to have an unbelievable financial planner, but it's been, for us, it's just been this new trajectory that we have to take as grassroots programs. And how are we helping the parents and the kids through this new world of recruiting when it comes to that? But then the NIL makes it so much more important for us to make sure that's a part of what we're doing. Not necessarily for athletes that are going to go and play big time, but for everybody. You know, you talk about mental wellness and those kind of things. And I know there's a lot of statistics that when you talk about drug addiction and those kind of things, there's a financial component in that too. So finances not only impact the sports world, they impact the everyday world too,
right?
when people struggle with money or don't know how to manage it. And so I think it's important that we do that not only for the kids in our program, but the families that need it.
Yeah, I think if I understand this correctly, you're trying to build an ecosystem of young adults to prepare them for life off the court. Because statistically, most kids coming through any program like yours, statistically, aren't going to be cashing paychecks, you know, in the sport that they love. In basketball, I've seen the statistics, you know, what percent of high school kids, well, first of all, what percent of kids going out for high school even make the varsity? What percent play Division I or just college? What percent then, you know, play professionally, not just NBA, but just even overseas? It just gets exponentially smaller. So I think as parents, it's important to have those goals, but don't be delusional as well. You know, look at the statistics, and if your child isn't going to make it professionally, then they're going to make it somewhere. You know, they're going to have to do something for a living. And one issue, again, sports and mental health, where I saw this, especially with our son Ian, with his golf career, was this getting wrapped up in this identity and then not having that identity. And look at athletes that get injured and so forth. Let's talk a little bit about this sports and mental health and how it can be really good for those that are doing well. But for the majority of kids that are in sports that are maybe struggling, or maybe their parents are really pressuring them. I think where they see a statistic that came out about feeling pressured, you know, has been a huge issue, not just athletically, but academically. So I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but I'm trying to set this up as a conversation, a pivot from the athlete to the person. And when you have this identity wrapped up and all of a sudden that identity's gone, what's left is important.
Absolutely.
You know, I look at our son Ian, who decided after you know, losing his brother his sophomore year of high school, then losing his mom his sophomore year of college, that goal to be a professional golfer just, you know, wasn't on the table, right? He didn't have it right here. You know, it was hard for him to make that shift. So what advice or what guidance do you give for either an individual that is the athlete, or for the parents to help with that transition, you know, if you don't make it?
The transition is still really hard.
You
know, there's a lot of organizations that focus on how we're helping college and professional athletes transition into real life. And so I think that's where we can start at an earlier age, when you introduce all these different things, not only the financial wellness or the mental wellness, when you talk about how programs like Brighton will be integrated into what we do in this this facility, but then you start talking about like career readiness. Mm-hmm. You know, you start talking about, you know, these kids understanding that there's more to life after sports, whenever the ball stops bouncing, and have you really looked at or thought about what your professional career could be? Because there's a lot of people that just don't like school, yeah. You know, and it's just not for them, but there's other career paths. And so with our partnership with Brighton, with Junior Achievement, with the Zach Johnson Foundation, we're actually trying to pool a lot of resources where we can help with tutoring and reading. You know, Zach yeah. Johnson's got a great reading program. Talk about Junior Achievement and career readiness and three-dimensional learning yep. and the financial wellness. You have that. And then you talk about the holistic, you know, my wife, Michelle, is really into the whole wellness thing yeah. and meditation and things like mm-hmm. that. So we really want to incorporate different things that can relieve pressure, not only for the kids, but for the parents. And when you start talking about how much families are investing yeah. in youth sports,
yeah.
there's another pressure because, I mean, we've been at events and you hear a parent say, if this is how you're going to pay, I'm not going to pay all this money for you to come here and do this. And so think about that when it,
yeah,
when, if a parent
that.
Says
yeah.
that to a child, not only is this child trying to go out and perform at a high level mm-hmm. to help their team win, now you've got this other pressure. So mm-hmm. I think it's important that we, as early as we can, help these kids understand who they are mm-hmm. without everything else, right? And then understand that there's going to be different chapters and we have to put some things in place, some tools in place that'll help the kids and the parents navigate those different chapters when you talk about the sports world and the kind of pressure and then what does it look like for them in the future. So I think it's really just about introducing resources early to kind of mm-hmm. help shape them. So we're not trying to tear down maybe some bad habits or bad thought processes.
Yeah, matter of fact, that's the driving force behind the whole Brighton idea. Mm-hmm. When I thought about this years ago when I was in that RV driving around the country, it's like, what's next? You yeah. know, and I thought to myself, you know, the whole industry, the whole space is predicated on treatment, right? You know, you have three kids, you cross your fingers and none of them have problems. But if one does, you come rushing in to save them. That's kind of the Western mindset. There's no preparing them necessarily or arming them with coping mechanisms and coping skills in advance of the treatment. Mm. And so when I was thinking about the Brighton app, like what did I want to do? Like what lane did I want to stay in? I didn't really want to come to market with a saturated product or idea that 80% of the nonprofits, 80% of the startups, 80% of the money is going into treatment. I thought, you know, just makes sense logically to me to move further upstream. You know, as Desmond Tutu said, and you know the quote, we got to stop pulling people out of the river and move further upstream. Find out why they're falling in the first place. Really? That's
yeah.
It's rocket science. To right. me, that's just common. That's just logical. It's like, but that's not where I saw the emphasis. And so when I reached out to you to partner with Brighton, you know, you had the same idea that because you're working with a lot of kids that are not there yet. They're not having these problems yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think the age of first use in the United States is 14 and half of all lifetime mental illness starts at 14. Mm-hmm. So that's a, you know, but society's not betting there. We're not putting our resources there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're scaring kids not to do drugs, not empowering them reasons why they shouldn't. The huge different psychological approach. You know, you can scare people to not do things or you can empower them to do things. Mm-hmm. And which one's more authentic? Well, the latter is, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so with you, what you're doing with Murray Elite, and then, you know, as a dad with two boys that are going to be doing more impactful things off the court, I have to think, through their connections and mm-hmm. through their resources. But where do you, I guess for you personally, Kenyon, where do you find this inspiration? You know, it goes back to your childhood, I would assume. And, yeah. you know, growing up in Battle Creek, Michigan, you know, and just learning things aren't going to be just handed to you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
maybe talk a little bit about where you grew up and how that molded who you are today as a dad, as a coach, as a leader in the community. And then how do we get kids to become less of a victim today? That's something that
oh wow,
we were talking a little bit before you showed up.
Yeah.
Our new producer, Ben, sitting off camera here, but we were talking about this victim mindset.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
that we have, even adults have too right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think,
you notice I throw in like 8 questions.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. No, I think, you know, as far as like how I was raised, you know, I spent a lot of time with my grandma, my mom, my sister growing up, before my mom remarried. But, you know, it was instilled in me then just the importance of balance, whether it was my spirituality or my education. And then, you know, as I grew, it was probably more my mom, because I didn't start playing basketball until 7th grade. Really got serious about 8th grade.
Now, you played a musical instrument.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. I played classical viola for like 7 years. And so I was really into it, like took private lessons and everything. And then got to my sophomore year and they only had
viola.
The viola, yes. They only, and I was
not lead guitar.
No, I was first chair viola. So I was the number one viola player in our orchestra for I can't remember how many years, but I came home one day because our coach said we had to sign up for 6 period gym, but that was the only period that they offered orchestra. So I came home, told my mom, like, yo, I think I'm gonna switch it up. And she's like, I don't know if I want you to quit. I was like, but I don't think I'm getting a scholarship playing the viola, mom. I was like,
Don't sell yourself short. Yeah, you're like, probably a heck of a viola player.
I'm getting kind of good at this basketball thing. You know, yeah. I want to go that route. And so she's like, you better. I think if I wouldn't have got a scholarship, she might have killed me. but it was always something that my mom put on us just to be well-rounded people. And that was the thing that I love. I mean, sometimes I was a little bit of an outlier, kind of did things outside of the box. But it all worked out well for me. And I just think that's what we have to do. We have to help our kids understand that they are not defined by this, that, or the other thing, because what happens is, and I've seen in sport, you talk about the victim mentality, yeah, right? So when you have a kid, say you're coaching and there's the social media and all that kind of stuff, and they see all these other players that they play against, yeah, or they see every day, and yep, they're getting some shine that they're not, yep, you know, and the first thing is like, well, why isn't that happening for me? Like, I'm better than that person and this is happening to me. And I think that's where it kind of starts, mm-hmm, in that comparison world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're comparing yourself to somebody else and not looking at yourself as a one of one,
right?
Which we all are.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it starts. When you start comparing yourself, now you're thinking about, okay, well, this is happening for them and not for me.
But it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. I mean, I'm guilty of it as a founder and startup. I look at other startups and ones that are doing, quote, I think better than mm-hmm me. It's easy to have imposter syndrome. It's easy to feel like you're not worthy. But how do you bridge that? How do you get, you know, people to, it's easy to say, well, just don't compare. Well,
yeah,
that's not how it works.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's what gets me about our society today with hacks and everything's just like, you know, it's like, got to put the work in.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to put the work in. And if you're concerned with imposter syndrome, then first thing I would suggest is maybe limit your time on social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where the problem lives. It doesn't live here. It lives in social media. And then you manifest it in your mm-hmm brain, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you talk about like, what do we do? It's just, it is really hard to separate yourself. And it's harder to view yourself as unique,
mm-hmm,
right? I think that's the one thing, because I've always felt like, I mean, my mom's always told me like I was unique, I was gifted, I was this, I was that. So I always believed in myself for that, but I fall victim to the,
oh, yeah,
to that as, yep, well, you know, playing at, you know, sports and stuff like that. Even people compare me to my kids, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you're a good player, but your boys are better. I'm like, yeah, they should be. Because I want them to be better than I, yeah, was. And so it's, yeah, hard to get away from that. But I think we have to do work individually to see ourselves as special.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And because there's probably, maybe it's your wife or your mom or dad that might call you special or, yeah, unique. But do we ever call ourselves that?
Right.
Do we always look at ourselves as a unique one of one? And I think if we can create that, that kind of perspective at a younger age, then we can help that. Like you said, there's still going to be times.
Yeah.
But we can give them the tools. We can give them the different thought process. Because when that does happen, how do you get yourself out of it? You know what I mean?
I heard a and you're familiar with the spiritual journey I've been, mm-hmm. I've been thrust upon. Someone was talking about grace and mercy, about giving yourself a break. And the way that he presented it to me is, imagine sitting next to you on the couch is, you know, 6-year-old Kenyon Murray sitting there, and mm-hmm. you could see you now with this perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how much love and care, and you would speak kindly to 6-year-old Kenyon Murray, and you would empower him, and you would say, you know, it's going to be okay. You've got all these tools, but that 6-year-old Kenyon Murray is inside of you right now, just like the 6-year-old Jeff Johnston is, mm-hmm. but we don't talk to him the same way. We criticize him. We talk down to them. You're not good enough. People are better than you, but you wouldn't do that if that child was sitting next to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can somehow be a little bit more compassionate on that inner child, and my word of the year in 2025 was innocence. That was the word that I like to pick like a word of the year. And, mm-hmm. and during the year, that's my theme. It's getting back to the inner child in all of us and allowing yourself to talk to the inner child as if you are talking to the adult Jeff right now. And we're so hard on ourselves. As mm-hmm. you get older, you get more hard on yourself.
Yeah.
And that inner child is in all of us at all times. And it's like, when I was presented that as an opportunity for me to work through some of the things I was working through, I thought, wow, that's really profound, because we don't, you know, if there was a young person next to me, I wouldn't be critical to that person.
Right.
Then why am I beating myself up all the time? Right.
Yeah. And I think we do it to ourselves, because as we gain knowledge and experience and we look back, it's always like, man, I personally is like, if I only knew this then, right? And I think sometimes we beat ourselves up because we're like, maybe there was an opportunity when we were younger to maybe make a different decision or go a different way. And as you look back on it, you're like, I knew what decision I should have made and I still made this other one, right? So it's almost like you're beating yourself up for like the bad decisions that you made or the decisions that didn't lead to what you thought it would lead to. And I think that's maybe where we'd be. I think when it comes to a kid, I don't know if we necessarily beat that kid up, that inner child in us. Maybe it's the adolescent or the teen or the young adult version of us that we really beat up, because that, you know, you talk about that 6 or 7 year old Jeff or Kenyon, like, I mean, what did we really know?
Right.
We were basically taking cues from our parents, right? So we really can't be too critical of that. I think it's more of that thought process of, I should have done this different or done that different. But I think it's later in life is probably when we're beating ourselves up more than we are when we're, as opposed to being that 6-year-old.
I think
version.
someone termed it earned wisdom. I mm-hmm. like that phrase, you know, instead of lived experiences, it's earned wisdom. It's like, we lose this ability to tap the elders today for wisdom.
Yeah.
We look at old people as they're not valuable to society anymore. So we just, you know, kind of push them out, and all the young people come in, they're all young and hungry. But the reality is there's a lot of really great stories if you can sit down with somebody in their 90s or 80s and just shut up and listen to them and let them talk. And those are the best lessons, I think, in storytelling is really, we talk about the mental health issues that we have today, and a lot of it comes from being lonely and isolated, and we can blame COVID and the phones and all that. But the reality is it supersedes that. It precedes that.
Yeah. You know? Well, you talk about like just, you know, gaining knowledge from our elders, right?
Yeah.
Like with a lot of the life coaching work I'm doing now, like we're seeing that more and more in the workplace, right? And you're trying to figure out, how do you merge these different generations? You talk about Gen Zers, Gen Xers, whatever, boomers. I mean, they're still out there and they're still in the workplace, and there's a lot of companies trying to figure out their culture around that. And you have a younger culture that may not believe that how the older people did it was the right way, right? Because, we can use ChatGPT, we can do all this other stuff.
And,
you know, but it's one of those things like, there's still a foundational knowledge that they can give you, especially if you're in the same kind of workspace and they can teach you how it's evolved and how you set yourself up to be not only successful now, but in the future when other evolution is going to come in that whatever field it is. So I think there's a lot of that when you talk about workforce as well as in the home, the value of what our elders can bring to the table for us. And are we willing to sit down and listen to them? Which, you know,
that's debatable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, some of the most important things that my mom and dad said to me growing up didn't resonate with me until I was older.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I can remember a lot of things that they used to say to me. And then as you get to have kids and you make your own like mistakes and you learn from, you're like, yeah, mom and dad were, for the most
yeah.
part.
Yeah.
You know, they were pretty, pretty wise. But so how do you find balance in a life today that's so full of distractions? You know, it's like, yeah. we just move from one thing to another. And I think I saw something, and you know the stat, but it takes 66 days for a behavior to become a habit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Evidence is out there that you got to put the work in, you got to put the time in, but no one has that today. You know, everyone's got like 66 seconds.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, then they're on to the next thing. And that really breeds an environment where you can be taken advantage of and you can be manipulated.
Yeah.
You can just keep buying books and hacks to fix your life, but then the reality is your life is getting worse, not better. So what's the secret sauce? How do you find balance in your life? And I'm going to answer a part of that for you.
Okay.
I know you have a strong faith.
Yeah.
So there's part of your answer, mm-hmm. but how do you suggest for people to really get balance today when it's so easy to be all caffeined up or sugared up or distracted or on just doom scrolling and
yeah.
you never ever really sit with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, finding balance today is there's a few things. One of it is really, you know, I didn't pick a word. It was a words. My words for 2025 were be still. And, and that's a mantra that obviously, you know a lot about with Michelle and I, but it's spending time with yourself. Sometimes
people
you just need to stop.
Don't like to do that.
You just have to stop. And it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily have to sit in silence or meditate, but like just giving yourself time.
Yeah.
And it may be sitting down with a book or, you know, a devotional or whatever,
right.
or it may even be watching a show, but give yourself time because you have to take care of yourself. Another thing that I think about is when it comes to balance is setting boundaries too. You know, I think that's how you have balance as well. Setting boundaries with work, setting boundaries with family,
mm-hmm.
setting boundaries with friends. And when I say setting boundaries, it's not like you're trying to keep somebody out, but you know, I have a friend that I know based on his family life and how it's structured. I won't ever call him after 5 o'clock because I know like for him, 5 o'clock hits and it's all about his family, right? The rest of the day. And, you know, I saw that. I was like, oh man, that's kind of cool. And, you know, but it also lets me know that, okay, this is a boundary that I'm not going to cross.
Right.
Unless he hits me up or something like that,
right.
I won't call him after that. And so I think it's setting up boundaries. Like even in work, I know if you have a 9 to 5, it's sometimes not as easy, but when you have your own company, being able to, you know, Monday is my day to do this, Tuesday's this day, Wednesday's this day, Thursday's this day. And if we get all that stuff done for the week, then Friday's maybe a date day mm-hmm. for Michelle and I. So for me, it's like not overwhelming myself with certain tasks. And if I can focus on like half my day is this, half my day is that, when it comes to work, I just feel a lot better. I don't feel overwhelmed. And if I didn't get something done in my checklist, I just move it to tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I just think we get wrapped up in some of the small things too of, well, I didn't get this done. I didn't get
that
done.
It's like, work out.
Yeah. It's like, world's not, you know,
right.
building, you know, houses aren't going to burn down because I didn't finish this task
right.
on my list.
Right.
right. And you have to be good with that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be good with not always accomplishing everything in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people get that mentality and it just burns them out and they create the wrong boundaries with their family.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around dad because he's always working or this, he never puts his phone away. So a lot of it starts with you and being able to be present with yourself and then being able to be present with the people that matter the most in your life. And so that's, for me, has been a way that I've been able to create balance.
One of the strongest aspects of our relationship, you and me, is the fact that you define faith a little differently than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much mutual respect for this. And I've learned a lot from you. I grew up an atheist my whole life. I kind of gravitated towards agnosticism in college and afterwards. And for those that don't understand the difference, atheist claims there isn't a God. I mean, I was that guy for a long time, but how can you claim something you can't prove? So I moved to agnosticism, which basically means I don't really understand what's going on.
Right.
It's like, I realize at my age, I'm not smart enough to understand 7 billion years of, you know, whatever happened. And so I've kind of hung my hat on that. But through the loss of my son, through the loss of my wife, through almost, you know, the loss of myself, you know, 4 months after she died, I've learned to kind of come to some consensus in my experience that this isn't just random luck. Like there's something going on. Yeah. You are, on the other hand, a very strong man of faith and have been since the day I met you. But the fact you and I have so many interesting conversations, I think lends hope to this disconnect in society where people can't talk about politics. They can't talk about religion. They can't talk about gun control or abortion or anything. It's just so heated. But I respect the fact you and I can have these conversations. And I've grown as a man a lot around you, Kenyon. A lot of it's been my faith. And I just define faith differently. Mm. You know, I have faith you and I are going to have a good conversation today. I have a faith that Matthew's not going to fall asleep at the wheel recording the podcast today. But, you know, what is faith to Kenyon Murray? And how have you been able to have a conversation with somebody who is kind of a non-believer, but not judge me? Because so many people of faith judge people like me that aren't strong in that definition of faith. And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a more of an observation than a question, but I really admire you in the fact that you've never been like, you never felt to be like a salesman of God.
Yeah, yeah.
You follow me?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's one of
you lead by example, put it that way.
I mean, I look at it like this. So faith and belief are two different things for me, right? Like, I think a belief that there is a higher power, or something like, you know, like you said, there's something, right?
Yeah.
I think a belief in that or a non-belief in that, like it's different than having faith. I believe that my faith is built on the fact that, I have someone that I look to and how I should live my life day in and day out as a way, you know, I want to live as close as I can to how Jesus lived. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's also, you know, that, so a belief in, say, you know, these nine different things that God lived, you know, that Jesus lived by day in and day out. Okay, there's that list, you know, and I believe in that list.
Mm-hmm.
But then the faith is if I live my life as close to how Jesus lived his life, then I have a faith that I will, once I leave this world, I will.
Yep.
You know, go to heaven. And I think so for me, it's a little bit different. I don't know if everybody else defines faith and belief that way, but that's just how I feel. Like, I have a faith in the fact that if I do things a certain way, if I treat people a certain way,
that's the same faith I have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Like, and, you know, some people call it karma.
Yeah.
Right. But that's how I really define it. So my thing is, how do I live each day as close to the way Jesus lived? And I'm not perfect, and no one will ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I try to live. I try to live. If I treat someone this way, they're going to treat me that way. And that's not always the case either. But I have faith that if I treat someone a certain way, that they may not reciprocate that to me, but maybe there's another opportunity that they can treat that person the way that I treated them. And so you just hope and pray that that you're setting an example for the people close to you and then the people that are watching you. Because in our space and with our profession and what we do now out in the public, there's always somebody watching. And so you want to make sure that you not only, for me, it's not representing in that moment. Sometimes it's like, am I representing my family the proper way? So if I represent my family proper way, then I'm representing Jesus a certain way as well. So I try to make it part of everything, and I'm not perfect, and I've made mistakes, and I will continue to make mistakes.
Well, I've seen you golf. You're not perfect.
Yeah, and I'm not a perfect husband. I'm not a perfect father, you know, but it's trying to be a better version tomorrow than I am today.
I think the faith thing is a...
That makes sense how I...
Oh, yeah, yeah. There. When I first meet somebody, you know, even after talking to him for an hour, I don't need to really know a lot about their faith. I can just watch their actions and I can get a pretty good gauge. Now, I can't necessarily tell if they're religious or if they're agnostic or an atheist necessarily, because your actions don't always predict that.
Right.
You know, causations, what correlation, whatever that term is, but just good people. What is the problem? What's so hard about just being a good person? I guess that's where I always have gravitated to. It's like, you can sit and we could talk and we could debate and you could try to convince me. I could try to convince you. At the end of the day, you know, there's an animal on the road that's injured, or some old person in a car that's lost. And, yeah. And what's wrong with just getting in your car and driving and having them follow you, and you get out and you help them? You know, you don't have to be religious to do that. You don't have to be an atheist to do that. Just,
yeah,
I think we're losing that. And they look at politics today and how diverse it is, and how, you know, especially going back to youth mental health, is that they just like, why am I getting out of bed? You know, everything's so diverse. Everything's an argument, and everyone's trying to make a point and watching.
Because it's I before we.
I know.
Really what I believe is, it's a selfishness.
That's right, yeah.
It's a selfishness that we have, and none of us are immune to it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably things you can think about, like, oh man, I kind of just thought about myself there. How is it going to affect me there? Right. Like, I think that's probably human nature, but it's just, there's just the selfishness when it comes to how we move in the world. And I think that's where the issues come in. That's where, like you said, why can't you just be kind? Why can't you just not be selfish?
Yeah.
I think if you look at it from that standpoint, if I did for others more than I did for myself, then you would see more good being done in the world. But,
oh man, imagine if each one of us, that example about the lady in the car is a true story. My son and I and Ian were going to have lunch, and we're meeting some other people, and there was a lady that pulled up, and she looked really disheveled, and she had her handicap sticker, and she just didn't look, I don't know if she was on some meds or whatever, but she didn't have a phone. She had like a map printed out, and we were trying to help her. I mean, I'm late to lunch. So I'm, you know, we're 5 minutes late, which I don't like at all. And Ian's going like, you got to go down here and turn right. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way she's going to find this spot. And I said, ma'am, we'll just follow me. We'll just get in the car. So we drove, and it was like 5 minutes, and got her out and got her into the place, and then drove back. And as we're driving, I asked my son, I go, so how's this whole thing make you feel? And he goes, I feel really good. And I say, yeah, but we were in a hurry. We're late now. I go, imagine if every single person did something like that across the world, in all environments, whether you're in a war zone or whether you're in a mansion. Now imagine if each one of us did our small role, something like that. Just, I could have said, oh, it's down there, four corners, see you later, good luck, and go in and have my lunch, but took the time and we did it. And, you know, there was no reward. It was just, made you feel good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is it so hard today to do that?
Yeah.
I really struggle with that.
Yeah. I just think like
it's I over we, like you said.
It's I over we, and thinking that if I had a thought and it just popped in my head, but it's just the idea of, if I take the time to do that, it's going to take away something from me.
Right.
As opposed
to, like, a net loss.
Yeah. If I take the time to help this person, it's going to help this person.
Yeah.
Like, just having that kind of mentality is so different. Right.
Yep.
And I just think that there's just not enough people that think that, right? Because most of us as human beings feel that what we are doing is more important than what you are doing, or what you're doing, or what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so, is it really?
Then the other day, just the opposite happened. I was with my daughter-in-law, Sipsy, and we're pulling out of this place, and this car didn't see me, and we're not going to go into the deal of, like, who's at fault, because there wasn't an accident.
Yeah.
But this young man slammed his brakes on, and he came within an inch of hitting me, and, you know, my first reaction was, is he okay? Are we okay? There was no accident. You know, no harm, no foul, right?
Yeah.
He gets out, and he has a muscle shirt on one thing. It wasn't going to go well. All pumped up from the gym, 1,000 miles an hour, F-bomb, and and I'm sitting there going, what planet am I on? What happened prior to this incident? It wasn't even an incident, because there was no accident.
Yeah. And he's probably on his phone. Mad,
that's my point. You know,
he's mad at you now because he was doing stuff in his car that he shouldn't have been doing.
So he yells at me, you know, and Sipsy's all scared. She's like, you know, and so I've seen enough videos that these things can get out of hand really quick. So the first thing I did is I started breathing through my nose as he's raged up and he's pacing back. I mean, I'm like, this is like the stuff you see on videos.
So he got out of his car?
Yeah. I wanted to fight me.
Oh my God.
Me. And he's like 24 and I'm 60. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm all calm. I'm like, dude, nothing happened. Are you okay? And yeah. And he's like, and then he's like, you need to go to the DMV and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I've never had a car accident in my life. I've driven a little bit longer than you, dude. I think my eyes are pretty good. But there's an example where just the opposite of caring about somebody. He was so raged up. He was so mad about whatever. And my first reaction was, instead of feeding that, especially as a male, because you get all like, you know.
Yeah.
The easy thing to do as a man is to get confrontational. It's like, no, not in my house, not on my watch. You know, I'm the man. You know, it's like, I breathed. I de-escalated it, let him kind of win that battle. Mm-hmm. We drove away.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, had I got out of the car and, well, I've got my butt kicked for one thing, but had I got out of the car, nothing good would have happened. He was already raged up. He was already up mad. Something was going on preceding all this that caused him to have this anger. And I thought, again, if more people had the courage to just walk away from something like that, it takes a real man to do that, to be honest with you. I know most people in this situation, they, especially if they would have been bigger than me and could have, you know, gotten in a fight, they would have tried to go out and prove their strength, you know?
Yeah. I might've got out of my car.
Yeah. You would have for sure. But that's my point of two examples that I was presented.
Yeah.
And one was a reactionary thing. One was more of taking the kind of the bull by the horns and doing something for somebody. If we can just continue replicating that and how much we could just bring down we could recalibrate the intensity that our society walks on pins and needles all day long.
Yeah.
And then we could also not just do that from avoiding conflict, but also promoting well-being and promoting goodwill throughout the world. It's like, what's so hard about that? I struggle with this.
I know.
I really do.
Because it seems pretty simple to me.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's free and it's in abundance. And
yeah.
And we have to do something, Kenyon, because as we escalate our comfort and our ease and our access to data and things are simpler now than they've ever been, I'm not sure our mental health is any better. Matter of fact, I know it's not. It's worse, not just for Gen Zers, but for even adults.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess as we tie this up today, what words of wisdom would you give for anybody out there that's looking to live undeterred, to somebody to be a little more resilient, to be a little more, I think a combination of being a little more selfless, but a little selfish as well.
Yeah.
You know,
taking
care of you first, you know, but not at the expense where it becomes I, you know,
it's
more of a we.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that's been huge for me when it comes to keynote speaking or even on the life coaching tip is just personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think we need to all do a better job of looking in the mirror and really breaking down the things that are, you know, because one of the things I say is like, for you to evolve, you got to be able to look into the mirror and say, these are things that I'm doing that are positively affecting me. And these are things that I'm doing that are negatively affecting me. When you talk about growth, it's cyclical and it's continuous, but there comes a time where you really have to say, if I want to evolve the way I want to evolve, I have to look at the things I do on a daily basis and then have to be willing to change some of those things, even if they may be hard, right? But the willingness to change,
they're necessary,
yeah. But the willingness to change, the willingness to confront the difficulties that we may be facing in our life, and then create a plan out of that. I think that's what we have to do more as individuals to really tap into that best version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. It comes down to micro decisions that we do every day. You know, some people think it's going to be something huge that you need to do to change your health or this or that. And it's not, these micro things that, if we can adjust that and commit to them, there's so many different things that we can change about ourselves. We can change about our future. And I think that's what we have to do more of. We, like you said earlier, the victim card, we have to stop blaming other people for where we're at in our life and start looking in the mirror and saying, okay, these are the decisions that got me here. And if we're able to do that individually with ourselves, now we're setting a tone and we're setting the example for the people that follow us, because we talk about a legacy, right?
Yeah.
Everyone leaves a legacy.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you do, there is someone looking to you.
Whether you like
it
or not.
For guidance.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is a legacy, yep.
And if you do bad things, they're going to be looking at bad things.
Yep.
Do good things, they're going to be looking at good things. So I think we have to understand the importance that our personal growth and development will have, not only on the people closest to us, but to our environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can start replicating that with the people that you're around, or bringing in people like that that want to change, then that's when you start changing communities. That's when you start changing the world, is when you can get people to duplicate the things that will wholeheartedly affect or impact your community in a positive way.
And being the one that rises that tide.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of so many situations in my life where it takes somebody to do the first thing. You know, mm-hmm. I remember when Ian was a freshman at Prairie, and in Prairie had never won golf state tournament. And Ian was having a very good career around the country, you know, outside of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some pull to get Ian to transfer. And this is I wrote this in my book. By the way, there's my book right there. No, shameless plug. I remember telling Ian when he's a freshman, I said, you know, Ian, Prairie has never had an all-stater in golf. They've never made state. You know, Kennedy, Lynn Mar, the other schools have long list of, you know, great golf program. I said, do you want to be a part of something that's already great, or do you want to be the one that made a program great?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an easy decision. So we stayed at Prairie. He was first team all-state ever. They named an award after him. And since he has graduated and went to college and played Division I golf, there's been like 12 kids now that have played after high school college golf, either at junior college, Division II, Division I. And so, as prophetic as that was, it was a little arrogant too to think that he was going to do that. He really did. And no wonder
he's friends with Chris and Keegan, because they thought they did the same thing.
Yeah, but that's my point. And these kids today, instead of saying, "Oh, I'm going to go somewhere where it's already rich," or I'm going to transfer. And NIL's changed everything. I get that. If Ian would have had $1 million to go to Kennedy, we probably would have went to Kennedy.
Yeah,
right. But the reality was, the cards weren't on the table back then. But anybody listening to this podcast, anybody watching this or follows Kenny or myself, you know, you be the one. You be the one that rises the tide. You be the one that does the thing that no one else wants to do. You be the 57-year-old to start up a tech company, you know, which goes against, I would have been my worst client as a financial advisor by far. Because I did everything that I should not have done. But again, you know, I'm just trying to tell anybody that's my age that's considering these things, you're only as old as you think you are. Yeah. And you're not, your youth is not, again, you can use that card as a victim as well. Well, I'm not old enough. BS.
Right.
BS. I mean, look at your boys have done. And so I think to wrap this up, first of all, thanks for coming on the show. You've been on the show a few times, but I admire your evolution, Kenyon. I say that word selectively here. Your growth. I really do admire kind of like the community leader you've become, watching you at Iowa fight, you know, to be a basketball player and chase your dreams to play overseas, which you did. And then, you know, marrying the love of your life and having a family, and then knowing behind the scenes all the struggles that your family went through that no one really knows about, that we got to witness and admire. And I grew strength from watching that as well, you know. But anyway, I just want to say I'm real proud of what you're doing with your new quarter sports complex. And every time I see you, there's more things you're telling me about it. It's exciting. And obviously for your partnership with Brighton, you're one of the first people that I pitched this idea to, and the boys were all in from the minute we mentioned it. We're just very grateful to be on this journey with you guys. And any parting words before you ride off?
No, I'm excited about the future. I think, you know, Brighton, like some of the things that we haven't even talked about, but with Brighton involved with the kids and the families that it's going to be involved with, like, think about just the data that we can get back from
Oh, man, yeah.
When you talk about how an athlete thinks maybe prior to a tournament, mm-hmm. versus how they think after the tournament, and then being able to take that information in its rawest form and take that to our coaches.
Yep.
And to be able to empower our coaches to coach a different way because of the things that we're learning from the app. So for us, it's a win-win to be involved with Brighton, to be involved with Junior Achievement, Zach Johnson, whoever, the community of North Liberty, just because we know and we believe that what we're building is going to be something that's going to create generational influence.
Yeah.
And what that means is when I'm long gone and the people that are helping me put this together are long gone, we're going to create something that will continue to impact generations in our community, you know, across the country, the world, who knows. But I'm just really excited to be on this journey to see what this new chapter has for myself, for Michelle, for our family, for you. I'm just really excited about the future.
Well, to have this vision to bring in all different aspects of human flourishing makes it very unique, because most people in your situation are going to focus on making your kid just a better basketball player.
Right.
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 You guys are doing that in addition to all these other things. And so I thank you and your family for everything. So
yeah. Awesome, right. Man. Thanks for having me, brother.
Always.
Appreciate you.
Take care, man.
All right.